Sheila, welcome, Hi. Welcome. So good to have you here.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Seat.
This is great in our farmhouse setting.
Do you love it? I know. Your set. Very, very cool.
Thank you. I know it's cozy. It's perfect for a little girl chat and girl time. All right, so here's the thing. I was looking at your life, reading about you. Author of over 5 million books. Incredible communicator, international speaker, TV host. How did you get here? Oh, and also a mom, right? And a wife. And a doggy mom as well.
Very important.
Yes.
Very important.
I know, I know. So how did you get here? Do you wonder sometimes, like, as a little girl, this is where I'd be today?
Oh, gosh, no.
Me too.
Gosh, no. Yeah. That was the last thing in my mind, particularly because of what happened in my childhood.
Right.
I mean, I was a bit of a tomboy before, but after my father had his brain injury and our house shifted completely. You know, there was just an awful night when my father tried to kill me and ended up taking his own life.
Wow.
So that made me sure that there was something wrong with me. Hmm. And there was something inside of me that was not good. Because if your own dad, who used to love you, could turn on you, then you had to keep yourself pretty well hidden. So I did that for years. So sitting on a television, no.
You would never, and probably people didn't look at you and say, oh, she's going to be on television and be speaking around the world.
No, they thought, they looked at me and said, bless her heart, yes.
How do you deal with family of origin pain? Because I know a lot of our viewers and listeners are struggling today with the pain that, they've had to endure in family.
I think there's all sorts of different things. I mean, I would imagine from your viewers that, I mean, some people have experienced, mine was physical, my dad was violent. But for many, it's sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. For some, it's verbal abuse where you're just told, you know what, you're not worth anything. You're never gonna be okay. You're never gonna be enough. And those wounds, you know, they dig deep. People, I hate that saying that says, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
No, that's not true at all.
Not true. Words cut deep. And I think sometimes when we don't know what to do with the pain, we just shove it into the cellar of our souls and we just carry on as if nothing's wrong. But those messages have a way of seeping out into our lives. I lived with a profound sense of shame.
Hmm.
And I think of guilt as, if I said something unkind to you, mm-hmm. I would feel guilty until I could say, please forgive me, that was all my fault.
Yeah.
So if guilt tells me I've done something wrong, shame tells me I am something wrong.
And there are many women, Sheila, that live with shame.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you can see that as, you know, as you connect with women and why they don't do things, the way they talk about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get past shame? Because that's a big one. And I say that with women because, I mean, I've dealt with shame because some of the decisions, the poor decisions I made in my life brought great shame on me and had to, you know, work through that and live with that until finally I made some choices. But what would you say to, you know, a woman who's struggling with shame from decisions and choices she made that weren't good?
For me, the answer, I mean, Psalm, I think it's Psalm 56, say, those who look to him will be radiant with joy. Mm-hmm. No shadow of shame will touch their faces.
Wow.
So I think for me, one of the greatest things was bringing that shame to Christ.
Yeah.
And knowing that he invites us to come as we are. So often we think, well, I'll tidy myself up
mm-hmm.
and then I'll come back to God.
Right.
But God said, no, come as you are. Come where you are. Come with who you believe yourself to be. Because sometimes we think, I am what happened to me, or I am the decisions I made. No. When we have trusted Christ, you say, I am a child of God.
And how does that happen? Because I think people are saying, yep, I agree with you, Sheila, but how do I make that first step in changing that tape recorder in my head? How do I make that courageous leap to believe that I am this beloved, you know, child, daughter of God?
For me, it started with daring to have a gut level, unedited conversation with God, where I didn't say the right things or the holy sounding things, where I told God everything and I just poured it all out and told him I was angry and afraid and didn't understand. If you're good and you're God, why couldn't you stop that?
Yeah.
If you're loving, why wouldn't you want to stop it?
Yeah.
Just all the things that we hold inside because we think, well, you can't say that to God. I believe to the level that we're willing to be honest with God mm-hmm. is an indication of how much we actually trust Him. Yeah. God is big enough to take your stuff.
I love that, because I think we're too afraid to either approach God with that, or we think that He doesn't care.
Yeah.
But I think that is that's a call to women and men today to say, it's okay. Put up your fists and just share and tell and yell and scream at God about these feelings.
Absolutely. If you look in Scripture, I mean, if you look at like Jeremiah, the prophet was like, you know, I wish I was dead. Job,
right.
So many people
yes.
were like, okay, Elijah, kill me now. I'm done.
Yeah.
But those are the people that you discover that God moved in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wow.
our honesty invites the presence of God.
Yes.
And it's when we're pretending and putting on a face that there's this barrier. But when you are raw with God,
mm-hmm.
in Scripture, Psalm 34 said, He's close to the brokenhearted.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And He saves those who are crushed in spirit.
That's so encouraging. You know, Sheila, you coined the phrase, it's okay not to be okay. And I was thinking about this because when I was younger, if I heard that, I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
There is no way it's okay to not be okay, because what I've been taught or what I see in society and culture is, no, you have to always be okay. You have to front this beautiful life and beautiful persona and look. But as I've gotten older, I've actually come to believe what you've just coined. Let's talk about that. How did that come to be? And what does that mean? I mean, it's very refreshing. It's very liberating,
yeah,
that quote, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was cleaning out drawers, and I came across a photograph. And I'm 21 years old. I have short black hair. I know that was my natural color. Apparently now I no longer have a natural color, so there you go.
Like black like this?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
But there's a look on my face. I'm just graduating from seminary, and I know that I'm thinking I'm just ready to take on the world for Jesus.
Yeah.
And I wish I could talk to that girl and mm-hmm. have said to her, you know what, this is not going to be the life you imagined. You're going to disappoint people, and they're going to disappoint you.
Yeah.
You're going to have your heart broken, but you'll survive.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be times when you're sure that God is not close, but He's always there.
Yeah.
And it will change how you see people, not as causes to be saved, but as people to be loved.
Yeah, that's good. And it's okay not to be okay, because yeah. there are many days I'm not okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not down and depressed. There are days like that too. But there are moments where it's like, you know what? I'm not great. I'm okay. And yet I'm okay with that being okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because we're living in plan B.
Right.
This was never God's original plan. God's original plan was that you and I would never look in the mirror and think, how do I look today? Or why is my hair? Why don't my pants fit? And what's wrong with this? So we're living in plan B, yeah. but Christ is a redeemer in plan B.
Mm.
You know, we're not home yet. So to expect perfection here is to set ourselves up to fail. For 30 years, I pursued perfection, and it almost killed me.
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting, but now I pursue Christ, who is perfect, and I get to come just the way I am.
You know, and that comes to mind, like in your book, It's Okay Not to Be Okay, that whole idea of, you know, women really struggle with, we're not good enough, mm-hmm. which I think is, you know, and I've struggled with that. And you know, women who have written to me have said, you know, that's one of the biggest issues. Yeah. I always feel I'm not good enough. I don't measure up to my husband. I'm not a good enough mom. I'm not a good enough colleague. I'm not a good enough baker, sewer, you know, driver, whatever it is. We're always comparing against things. How do you stop that madness? Because I think it's madness.
Mm-hmm.
So that is madness to constantly live in, I am never good enough.
Yeah, and comparison is deadly.
Yes.
You know, if we look at one another and think, well, she's taller than me, or she's thinner than me, or her husband's...
Everybody's taller than me, Sheila.
I'm not much taller. But I think, you know, one of the things that God showed me when I was invited to join this group called Women of Faith,
yeah.
where we were speaking in these big arena events, you know, 15,000 people. And I remember my very first one, hearing the first two speakers and excusing myself and locking myself in the toilet and saying, Lord, I can't do that. I'm not smart like her, and I'm not funny like her. And I felt the Lord say to me, Sheila, run in your own lane.
Oh, that's
run
good.
In your own lane. Be who I've uniquely created you to
yeah.
be. I mean, you actually get to like being you. It's very, you can then appreciate other people too, and you don't need to be competing with them.
Yeah, that is refreshing. That actually takes off a lot of the sort of like this bondage and things that we put on to say, I need to be like her.
Yeah.
And you know, social media doesn't help. You know, flipping through Instagram and Facebook and you're like, wow, those lives are amazing. I never measure up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, run in your own lane. God has uniquely, you know, given you gifting and talents to be you.
And so often when we're younger, I remember as a younger woman thinking, you know, if I could just be 10 pounds thinner. I've basically been trying to lose those 10 pounds for about 42 years.
Tell me about it. If I could just be, same as me.
You know, a little bit thinner, or a little bit, then I would be acceptable. And then people would like me. The truth is, most people don't care about that. If you actually make peace with who you are and you show up, there's something unique about you.
Okay, you just said most people don't care about that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's huge, because we do a lot of our stuff because we think people care about that, and so I'm always trying to manage and be who other people want me to be.
But most people are not even thinking about that. They're thinking about what's wrong with themselves.
Right.
And if you actually make peace in your own skin, then you're able to just to enjoy your life, but also to be present for other people, not to be perfect, just be there.
That's good. In your book, It's Okay Not to Be Okay, I want to just quickly go through these 8 steps on moving forward, getting through the storm, and tease a little bit about these chapters, because they resonate with me, and I know they resonate a lot with our viewers and listeners. So the first step on moving forward is take the first step. It sounds like a no-brainer, but take the first step.
Taking the first step is just being honest. How many people drag their baggage into church every Sunday, worship, and drag their baggage home again? Find a moment, find a place and a space, and be honest.
Good. Number 2, admit that you are stuck and struggling. Yikes!
But that's hard, because sometimes we want to make it seem like we've got it all together. And one of my most honest conversations with God is, you know what, I'm stuck here. You know, I want to be the person that gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and reads all of Jeremiah before before I go out. But I'm stuck here and I'm struggling. And there's something about being honest and even sharing it with a friend, finding one safe person and saying, hey, you know what, I'm stuck here. Sundays you'll discover that person might be too, and you can help each other.
That's excellent. Okay, number 3, change the way you think.
Yeah.
All in here.
I think a lot of times in the church, we pay more attention to what is on the exterior, how we seem, than our internal transformation. So I think if you can change, I call it re-wallpaper your mind. Mm-hmm. Don't let the old tapes play over and over again. Find a scripture and put it on a sticky note and take it with you all day and begin to re-wallpaper your mind and change the way you think.
I like that. And I love wallpaper. So
yeah,
I'm actually envisioning the wallpaper in my mind. Okay, number 4, face the what ifs even if you're afraid.
How many talented people are there out there who are thinking, well, I'd love to do that, but what if I fail?
Right.
What if I fall? What if I make a mistake?
Yeah.
And my thing is, you know what? Do it afraid. Don't wait till you're not afraid. Commit your way to the Lord and step through and do it afraid and leave the responsibility to God.
You know, and he's with us. Like, I've learned that too. It's like, you're not alone.
Yeah.
So I have a great community, a great family, and then God with me. It's like, you can conquer anything, right? And I agree with that failure is good. People need to fail to then, I think for me, it builds character and it helps you just sort of cling to God more.
Yeah.
So it's not just you doing it on your own.
I love that.
Excellent. Okay. Number 5, let go of what you can't, control.
That's hard. For women, that is so hard because we just want to. But there's times when you realize, you know, I love Psalm 56, 46, verse 10 says, be still and know that I am God. Well, as a young teenager, I tried to be still, and it drove me nuts.
Me too.
Till I went to seminary and realized the Hebrew root of be still, it means let go. Let go and know that I am God. Let go of what you're trying to control and give it to Him.
It's almost like a posture prayer in the morning, rather than like, you know how we do this?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we should pray this way.
Yeah, open-handed.
Open-handed, let go.
Yeah.
Okay, number 6, rise above disappointment.
That's hard.
Yes, it is.
There's not one single person on this planet who hasn't faced disappointment.
Right.
And sometimes when something doesn't go the way we pray, then we think, is God mad with me? Why did He answer her prayer and He didn't answer my prayer? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
But I think when you realize that the hope that we have been given, you know, we've been told this hope will not disappoint. Our faith in Jesus is not wishful thinking. It is a solid hope based on who He is. And it will ultimately never disappoint.
Beautiful. All right. Last 2 is number 7. Celebrate your scars as tattoos of triumph.
That's one of my favorite chapters.
I love that. I love that. I can even visually see that. It's great.
Because if you think about it, God tells His story in scars. When you look at the hands of Christ, Christ could have chosen to rise from the grave without the marks of crucifixion, but He kept them. And to me, our scars are proof that God heals. They're no longer open wounds. They're scars. They're markers. And if our Savior is not ashamed of His scars, Why would we be ashamed to show ours?
That's powerful. That makes me quite emotional because there's been a lot of scars, and a lot of times we want to cover the scars, put foundation and makeup over the scars to cover them. But I think that's really freeing for women to say, no, we wear our scars, you know, as a symbol of God's redemption and grace in us.
I was at a conference last weekend. A 15-year-old girl, after I spoke on this, came up and pulled up her sleeves and showed me all the places. Oh. She was a cutter, and she said, I've never shown them to anyone before. Oh. And I said, you offer those up as an act of worship.
Oh, that's beautiful, Sheila. All right, last one, Sheila, number 8. Decide to start again and again. Not just again, it's like, and again.
Because that's how we are. We think, okay, I've got this 8 steps, a plan, I'm on it. And then we fall down, mm-hmm. as we will. But then you get up and you start again, mm-hmm. and you start again, and you start again.
You start again, and you start again. Sheila Walsh, thank you so much. Your book, It's Okay Not to Be Okay, what a wonderful read for anybody who is struggling to get through the storm. Mm-hmm. Or even it can be preemptive. Like, even we know storms are going to happen, so maybe read it while you're in a really good place so that you'll be prepared when the storm happens.
It was lovely talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great to have you here. Thank you. Well, welcome, Joanna, Cheryl, Brooke, and Lisa. Was that not a fantastic interview?
Whoa.
Yes. Wow, Sheila. Amazing. Well, let's talk about what we learned from her. And let's start off with the phrase that she coined, it's okay not to be okay. Mm. Did it disturb you? Did it encourage you? Did it frighten you? How did you feel when she said that? Jo?
Yeah, I think it depends maybe what kind of a culture you come from, especially if you're a church person. In my church, that is a normal thing. That doesn't feel controversial at all. But I know for some people, they come from a church where when you go to church or when you're in front of people, you have to present in a certain kind of a way.
Yeah.
It's not okay to talk about going to therapy or, you know, mental health or, you know, anything like that, because it's a taboo. Mm-hmm. So I love that she's bringing this more into the forefront for people who are not okay, but don't have a place to talk about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's good. Cheryl.
Definitely my world, my church upbringing, my culture, presenting strength, not showing any breaking or weakness at all. So that phrase, it's okay not to be okay, the whole entire book gave me permission to breathe.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. It changed my life. It softened me in areas that I was very hard, and it mellowed me out where I was too intense. And I'm on a journey, but it planted some really good seeds for me.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah.
Brooke, it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah, it was really encouraging for me, because I think that, like, at what point in my life do I ever have it all together? Never really. You know, I'm always on a new journey and a new thing. And so it was just encouraging to know that, like, we can come to God as we are, with whatever we're walking with or carrying, like, we can come to God. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Lisa. That was my response to it. Absolutely, it's okay not to be okay. And who really is perfectly okay? And in fact, the other tagline that came to my mind is, you're okay because you're not okay. Because it's a recognition of your fallenness. And hey, you're not going to do this alone. Anybody who thinks here, it's very isolation, very lonely. And then, of course, God, when he speaks into that space, it's like, you're actually not okay, and it's okay to be that, because I'm everything else. So I love the title. Cool. I think it's really great.
It's good. Well, Sheila shared with me 8 lessons about how to start again, how to make that first step. Mm. Which one really resonated with you? There were 8. Which one resonated with you, and why? How have those helped you as you've been reading and thinking about it? Joanna.
For me, it's the changing the way you think. Mm-hmm. I realized when I first went to a counselor's office many, many years ago, that it was my thinking that was leading to the places where I was feeling anxiety and depression. That I actually had to change the way I thought about myself, thought about the history I come from, thought about hurts or unforgiveness or even the things that I think I'm good at and not good at and all that kind of stuff. I had to change it. It's that we are transformed by the renewing of our mind. That when God takes a hold of our life, he actually changes how we think. It's a brain surgery kind of a thing. And it happens like every single day. Because aren't we always like confronted with things? We realize, whoa, like, or someone who loves us says, like, you're really not thinking clearly about this one. Like, let me offer a different perspective. So we have to change the way we think to become more healthy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, Cheryl.
Admit that you're stuck and struggling. And I have so many thoughts on that, but I found my life in this particular text here where she says, I also saw at times my understanding of God's love for me was based on how things were unfolding in my life. Mm-hmm. When things were going well, I felt that God loved me. And when things were hard, I felt alone. Mm-hmm. Well, man, that was a mirror for me, because I can see the roller coaster of my life and the movement based on the blessings, mm-hmm. based on the abundance, mm-hmm. and that feeling of being alone when it seems scarce and stormy and hard. Mm-hmm. When God is so faithful, so mm-hmm. consistent, I was challenged to have a consistent view, yeah. right? Wow. To change my view and my heart and to be that enduring, walk of trust with him, like yeah. not based on, how many of us do that, yeah. right?
And that's good, because admitting is the first step. Because a lot of times we don't admit it, we don't want to yeah. see it, we're blind to it, yeah. and I think admitting it's a
big... And our
big...
faith walk is attached yeah. to stuff, you know, coming yeah. and going.
Yeah,
and,
oh, that's yeah. good.
That's good, having a consistent view of who God is, yeah. right? Like, he yeah. doesn't change.
Yeah. Brooke, your yeah. point.
I'm smiling as you're talking, saying, like, give us a point. I was writing, I had my computer on the airplane on the way home from tour, and I was, my seatmate looked over, and she was like, oh, what are you writing? And I was writing chapters about the chapters I was reading. I was so, I loved this book. It was transformative for me, and there's a saying she says, do it afraid, because when we show up afraid and all, then God can do what only God can do. Mm-hmm. And I think about, even for me being on this show, I ask God for opportunity to speak more. And I feel like I'm not a great communicator. I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And I asked, and God delivered. And I was afraid. But when I show up and do the best I can, then God can do what only God can do.
Yeah. And he speaks through that.
Yeah.
He speaks through that.
Yeah, I just thought that was really powerful.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Lisa.
I was just thinking back to Joanna's point, like, get out of your own headspace, right? Change the way you think. Yeah. For me, it was a chapter about the scars and how they can be tattoos for triumph. And that whole concept that she talks about in that chapter, I overlaid it on top of Ephesians 6, where Paul talks about the armor of God. And one day we'll all stand before Christ. In my brain, it's like, when I stand before Christ, I don't want my armor to be in mint condition. It should be dented. Yeah. It should have bruises, like maybe missing parts. Like, and those are some of the scars or the wounds that we have that Jesus heals, because it shows us that we did the best we could in a fallen world. What God allowed in our lives, we received both good and bad. We placed ourselves in his hands, and we trusted him to lift us up before that. And those scars are ours.
Yeah.
In many ways, when we understand that he is sovereign and good and faithful and true, they're a precious gift, yeah. Yeah. and to treasure those.
Yeah, and she talks about living from a place of being scarred versus being wounded, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your husband's left you, your children are not following, whatever's happened in your life, you can make a decision to live wounded. Yeah. To live in that, or you can live healed, yeah. and your scars are proof that God heals, yeah. Yeah. just like yeah. the scars on the hands of Jesus.
Yes,
you
know, shows,
and he was proud of his scars.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. so that's
I
powerful.
Love that, and I think that was a good reminder, because a lot of us try to hide the scars,
yeah. Yeah.
cover them up. Like, I just want to be like, you know, those are forgotten. I just don't want anyone to see them or know about them.
Yeah,
but it was very empowering when she said, "Yeah, but look, yeah. you know, God." Himself, Jesus kept the scars, yeah. right? And I was just like, wow. Like, my whole body went into like, wow, I never thought about that
yeah.
before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I powerful. Think that is so powerful.
It's also the natural wear and tear on our bodies, because I know as females and women, sometimes the wrinkles get to us, but it adds character. Like, I'm a whole
it's true.
Heart, it adds character to who you yeah. are.
I'm too young for wrinkles.
I'm going to fight the wrinkles, people.
No, yeah, I feel like I earned them.
Yeah,
absolutely. Every single one of them.
Well, during the interview with me, Sheila shared this Bible verse. It's Psalms 34, 17 and 19. Yeah. And I know, Joanna, you have that. And I think it's such an encouraging verse for us today.
It says, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Yeah. The righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all.
Mm. Oh,
And I love in this where it says at the end, the righteous person may have many troubles. We're going to have those things. We're going to have them. Like, how great are our troubles? But greater still is our God. Yeah. That, like, however, like, if you fall five times, he picks you up six.
Yeah.
It's this idea of, like, his grace, his compassion, his mercy, his presence in our life. Mm-hmm. For every time we are wounded or hurt, he is there just as close as the time before.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, the psalm is written by David, and he's in a cave. He's hiding out. The King Saul is wanting him for murder. Like, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to, like, accuse him of all these things. He's trying to murder him. He's hiding in a cave, and he writes this song to give courage to the guys that he's hiding in the cave with. Yeah. Wow. And he just reminds them again, like, for every time we've been stuck in a cave, God has taken us out every single time.
What are your thoughts about the verse? Mm-hmm. Powerful. How does that encourage you?
Yeah, I mean, I hope to be like David, giving encouragement and writing those prayers in the midst of my own disasters, writing those prayers for my friends and for the people around me, just as a testimony of, like, who God is in my life. Yeah, like, no life is not perfect, and we all have things. We've all been through things, whether we've brought them on ourselves or they've been done to us. Yeah. But yes, God remains faithful, and he remains good.
Yeah. And that shows up in your songs. Those are the kind of songs you write.
Yeah.
Like, you write them out of those places. You write them from your caves.
Yeah.
Good. Lisa, what about you?
I love what David has gone through. I appreciate that he's got his own scars too. Yeah. My goodness. And what I love about these verses is that it also stretches into not just the end of your life on this earth. The righteous may have troubles. They will. I mean, we all will. But then it reaches into eternity.
Yeah.
Like, even if every single day of your life was suffering, like, you were born in year 200 of the 400 years of slavery for Israel, he will redeem that. And he's not just out to make your life comfortable here. He is a God that reaches beyond what is just this life. Yeah. That's what I love about this.
That's right.
That's good.
That's right.
I'm just, everything they said, and times 10, I'm just so challenged that in times of pain and crisis, that rather than the natural inclination to roll away from God and go into my cave, that I would draw near. That in pain I would go closer to God, and that in pain I would see God more clearly. I think I got really challenged by the book and that scripture, because we run, right? When we're hurting, we coil.
Yeah. You know, I love that it's okay not to be okay as long as you choose to get up and keep going.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't stay that way.
You don't stay that way.
Yeah.
There's the grace part of it where we acknowledge our pain and our hurt and we're just not okay.
Yeah.
But you don't stay there. And that was what's really encouraging with Sheila. She says, it's okay not to be okay, you know, only if you get up, trust God, and make that first step.
Yeah.
So I was so encouraged by her. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I'm glad her thoughts and her book encouraged you. I think that's amazing. And to Sheila Walsh, thank you so much for your presence today and for stopping by See Her Love to share your encouraging thoughts with us. And to you, our viewers, listeners, and friends, we hope that our conversation today will help you start again. Even when life has been hard, it's okay not to be okay if you choose to not be afraid and you choose to make that first step to move forward with God's help. Change the way you think. Fill your mind with hope and faith and courage. We know you can do it. You can do it.
Thank you for listening to See Her Love, the podcast with Melinda Estabrooks. We are able to do See Her Love because of these generous sponsors. Tyndale University. Melinda and I are both Tyndale alumni. Tyndale is where you will experience high quality academics interwoven with faith and a community of students and faculty that challenges you to live authentically, to follow Christ, and actively engage your culture. Visit www.tyndale.ca. The Canadian Bible Society champions the Bible as the voice of God, revealing Jesus Christ, the living word. Go to www.biblesociety.ca. Please check out these amazing organizations who are doing life-transforming work and who we are proud to be partnered with.